Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Dr. Raj Narayanan of Baptist Health, South Florida, spoke about his practice becoming the first in the United States to successfully treat a patient with a liver tumor using the EPI-1 robot, and how the device saves time when performing microwave ablation or cryoablation. Despite the learning curve to using EPI-1 in the clinic, he said that it may allow even less experienced users to perform highly accurate surgery, thereby increasing the availability of those who can offer these treatments across multiple centers.
So first, can you give me an overview of what surgical liver cancer care at your practice typically looked like before you start using the EPI-1 robot? How has the advent of this technology sort of changed your treatment approach?
So the word surgery is used kind of interchangeably with us. What we do as interventional oncologists is not surgery. It's not open surgery. Basically, we use imaging guidance to treat tumors either with needles or catheters. So when we use needles, we go directly into the tumor with the needle, and either we burn it, freeze it, or electrocute it. There are different energies that we use to kill the tumor, but nothing is scooped out or cut out of the patient. And so once the treatment is done, the needle or needles are taken out of the patient, and there's a Band-Aid that's put on the patient. Patient goes to recovery and usually stays in the hospital for one night, or sometimes even goes home the same day. If we go from a catheter-based technique, we go through the blood supply of the tumor and either block the blood supply, or we deliver chemotherapeutic agents directly to the tumor, or we deliver radiation particles to the tumor. That's kind of a very broad description of what we do as interventional oncologists. So the EPI-1 robot is something that helps us with the first technique, which is the ablations or needle-based procedures that we do. So now to start with the answer to your question, sorry for the long-winded road to get there, but when we do ablations, we typically use CAT scan guidance or ultrasound. And basically, as interventional radiologists, we're trained to advance the needles in different planes. So you go from the skin to the target, making adjustments to your needle along the way. So you can go from skin to the target with one push. You would have to plan it. And as you go in with the needle, you make adjustments. The needle could be a little towards the head or to the feet or anterior or posterior. So you have to make all those adjustments as you're doing it. So before the EPI-1, all of this had to be done in your head, and you had to manually make the adjustments. With the EPI-1 robotic system, you plan everything in the workstation of the robot. And once that's done and it's plotted the path for you, you can pretty much push the needle from skin to target with one push, instead of having to do multiple check scans, which involves radiation to the patient and to the operator.
Thank you for the very detailed breakdown of that. And what is your approach for selecting patients to undergo this procedure? Are there any patients for whom this approach may not be recommended?
So if you're talking about the EPI-1 robotic system, any patient where we perform image-guided ablations today can be applied, or the EPI-1 robot can be used to treat those patients. The EPI-1 is pretty versatile. It's not just for a single needle system, because we have ablation technologies that use single needles and multiple needles. So you need a software platform that can plan your trajectory for both single and multiple, and the EPI-1 can do that. So if you're using a one-needle microwave ablation, or you're using a multi-needle cryoablation or multi-needle irreversible electroporation, the robot can handle that and provide you with the planning tool. And so any of these cases where you use freehand, you can now use the robot to perform the procedure.
And I read that your institution was the first in the country to successfully treat a patient, specifically one with a liver tumor, with this technology. So what are your thoughts on just sort of being the first to implement this kind of technology?
But it's very exciting to be in the forefront to bring such a cutting edge technology to mainstream clinical practice. And I've heard about it, I've seen it, and then watched my colleagues in Europe, two of my colleagues who've now used it extensively, Professor Thierry Dibert in Gustave Roussy in France. He's done well over 100 patients. And so after talking to him, I realized that it kind of changed how he was doing ablations. And so to bring that into the US and to be the first is very exciting. So how has it changed what we do? To first and foremost, there was a learning curve that we had to get over. And once we got past the learning curve, we are now up to nearly 36 or close to 40. I don't know the exact number, but over 36 ablations using the robot. We've used it in microwave, cryo, and IRE. So with cryo and IRE, we had to do multi-needle placements. What we've seen is that it has a high level of accuracy of getting us from skin to target, and also offers other additional capabilities of planning, which if you're doing it manually, can take a good amount of time, especially with multi-needle planning. With the robot, you just have to identify the volume of the tumor, click on the center of it and pick the number of needles that you're going to use. And it gives you a trajectory for all three, four, five needles that you're going to place. Everything is done with one click. So it saves a significant amount of time. And when you place the needles, once again, since you're not doing multiple check scans, you're saving on radiation and time. So those are all exciting areas of advances in this space where we've not seen much as far as technical advances. Technology has advanced. From RFA, we went to microwave, cryo, IRE, but from the technical standpoint, we've kind of been stagnant. Navigation tools were the first leap into the technological advances, and now we have the robot.
I imagine it must be like just incredibly exciting to make use of new types of technology like this and how it may just impact.
Yes, and even more so with the results we were seeing, because it, when it delivers what it says it will do, I think it definitely makes it more exciting. And to be in an institution like ours, to have the ability to not just use it clinically, but also have the research opportunities that come with it, I think that is something that I'm excited about looking forward.
Earlier, you described that making use of this robot, there was a bit of a learning curve. Outside of that, are there any other challenges or nuances to using this tool that other physicians should know about?
Absolutely, yes. So we're kind of reprogramming ourselves and relearning the process, which we've done for years, some of us for decades. So you're used to planning your case and your trajectory and your treatment on the CT monitor once the patient is scanned. Now you're going to move from there to using the robotic Epion's workstation. So that's a big change right there, because you're not putting grids on the patient. You're not using laser pointers to mark your trajectory. You send all the images to the workstation and then you plan there. So that's one big change. And then having this robot and the workstation in the room is a new device that's going to be occupying space where you're working. So trying to work around it in your workflow is another change. And getting all this ready in the beginning, because you are doing something completely different, it's going to take a little bit more time than what you're typically used to. So those are the things that affect the workflow. And from a learning curve, the microwave cases with the single needle were pretty straightforward. But when you bring in multiple needles, and like for cryo and even more for IRE, there is a, in my opinion, a steeper learning curve for those procedures based on how we do these manually. For example, when you are doing it manually, you can advance the needle as close as possible to the rib. But with the robot, you need to pick a path which will not cause any deflection of the needle. If it hits something, it can cause, even a minor deflection could take the needle tip off the trajectory So that's, you need to think about it a little differently. And the robot doesn't always need to plan everything on plane that we would do when we are doing the planning. It can take you from lower to higher or up to down. It'll get you to your trajectory. So it may not be on plane as we would plan it. So things like this are things which we have to get used to and get comfortable with. So there's definitely a learning curve. And then depending on how busy or how experienced the user is, the curve can be, you know, smaller or steeper. So
how do you imagine technology like this may impact treatment in the liver cancer field and perhaps other disease types later down the line?
So I think it levels the playing field. It can bring less experienced users to do these procedures with a higher level of accuracy. So I think that would improve the availability of physicians who can offer these treatments in multiple centers.
I see. And overall, what do you hope that your colleagues take away from this conversation?
I think we are at the beginning of an exciting technology that's being introduced in the space of image-guided ablation. Where I see this going would be with the advent of the improvement or advent of the 5G technology. In other countries, they're using these robotic devices remotely, which I feel that eventually we will get to the point where the science would allow us to operate on patients in remote locations, thereby improving access to these cutting-edge technologies in different institutions where they may not have the physician stationed there. Higher accuracy, helping less experienced physicians do more complex cases, less radiation, quicker procedure times, and then finally, having the ability for remote access. I think those are where I see this going.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.